Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome you to On Point. I'm Don Allen with my co-host in Studio A, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good afternoon, Mr. Edwards.
Welcome, Mr. Allen in Studio B. One of the things we may want to do at the end of this program, Mr. Allen, is play a little John Philip Sousa, a little marching European marching music. Got circumstances and situations going on here in Minneapolis that there's not the level of transparency that one would come to expect in a beloved liberal enclave. But what do we got, Mr. Allen?
Well, we got a lot of things going on. We're going to talk about this week the ongoing meetings at the cookie cart behind the tornado relief disaster, the players involved, and what some folks are bringing to the table and saying that, you know, they want to control this or that. And also the very important thing, the gentrification of North Minneapolis with the exodus of 12,000 African-Americans.
At a minimum,
yes.
As we wrote about in our column in this week's oldest and largest black newspaper, the Minnesota Post Recorder, gentrification is unfortunately at play. We were being told, Mr. Allen, leading up to today, and by the way, it is a beautiful day here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Temperature is about 83. No storms anywhere in the vicinity. And so today was cleanup day. And basically what happened was allegedly 2,000, I'm thinking of military terms. I was thinking in terms of a battalion. Oh, excuse me. 2,000 volunteers were brought into a staging area in a northern suburb and a defunct mall called Brookdale. Jeez, we got to get these names right. We got so much interplay going on. And
yes.
They were then redeployed into the stricken area of North Minneapolis, which is actually and technically by law under martial law.
Yes.
Under martial law. And so a lot of African Americans, as we understand it here on Point, were shocked to find themselves early this morning being ordered to stand down, to return to their homes under the penalty of arrest and detention, if you will. People seem to be shocked. I was a little puzzled because I know that at one point, Mr. Allen, we tried to talk about this in these meetings that we've been having for the last week or so, and the presider, if you will, facilitator, as he said, part of his job, indicated that we really didn't need to discuss that. We've talked about that at some later point in time. And let me just say, Don, what I'm bothered with. And by the way, let's give our call number, then I'll come back to what troubles a veteran, if you will.
Sure. Our number, our calling number today is, as always, is 877-572-4288. That number, again, is 877-572-4288. The phone lines are open, and we're broadcasting live from downtown Minneapolis, the McIntosh Studio. Go ahead, Mr.
Edwards. And Studios A and B.
Yes.
Here's the thing that troubles me. I had wondered why I had not seen any participation from our state legislator doing this week and a half of meetings, though I know that there were more clandestine meetings of the group that would take place in the early morning, and many of us were not informed of that. But both our state representative for the legislative district and our United States congressman are attorneys at law. And I initially was wondering why they did not share with us or even call a press conference to warn the citizens on what was at play and what the risks were to your constitutional rights and to such things as habeas corpus, writ of habeas corpus, and et cetera. And they didn't do that, Don.
No, they did not.
I'm kind of wondering, because they are attorneys. They are what you call legal practitioners. And, you know, they sure know the law better than any of us South 40, if you will. For our international audience, that's kind of a inside joke told by black folks in America when we realize we are no longer can be around the big house, the big master's house. and we're relegated to what is called the South 40. That normally was the worst piece of land on the plantation. Right, Don?
Yes, exactly.
If we had a plantation that was next to some swamp, that's where the Negro shanties were built, if you will. I mean, it's a fact of life. And so, but I was puzzled, colleague. I was puzzled on why these two legislators, who are both legal practitioners, attorneys, did not warn the population of what was happening, because for the last 13 days, African Americans have been the target of significant police sweeps, arrest, detention, and et cetera. And because we are in a declared zone, if you will, you have no rights. You can be detained without habeas corpus being in place, without a judge even taking a look at your case.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, am I off base here? Maybe we're missing the on-point piece here, Don?
No, you're absolutely correct. I've got telephone calls, of course, the cleanup today, the volunteers clean up and sweep. We've gotten calls into the studio that homeowners, African-American homeowners, were told to, you know, go back to your house. You know, we have volunteers out here today. You can relax. You know, there's no need to be out here. And it was a police state in North Minneapolis
today. Now, these black citizens, residents, or at least for a period of time until further notice, were being told by paramilitary forces that they needed to go back in their house under threat. And I want to use this word because I've heard the same information, under threat of arrest, right?
Yes, yes.
So you're not being asked to voluntarily return to your abode. You're being told that under punishment of arrest and detention for an indefinite duration, if you will, that you better get your black behind back in the house, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. I mean, I hate to use the language, but that's what's at stake here. Now, why was it, does anyone know, because when that question came up in the committee meetings this week, why was the staging area held almost, 5 miles north of the main area in a now defunct shopping mall? I know why. It was because they wanted to be able to give them proper identification, cross-reference their names to those that had called in and indicated they wanted to be a volunteer, because I understand there was great emphasis. Homeland Security had suggested, supposed to say that. Homeland Security had suggested that there be a close scrutiny of zip codes.
Yes.
Because we really kind of wanted the right kind of people to come in. You know what I'm saying, Don?
Oh, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. And also today, Mr. Edwards, I find something very interesting. In the Star Tribune, an article by Dee DePass and Steve Alexander, there's a story titled "Northside Tornado Leaves Business Owner Shell Shock," and there's a photo of Broadway Liquor Outlet. It's Dean Rose. They're talking about small business, who we know is a friend of the Ackerberg Group in North Minneapolis, and is selling liquor. If you have exact change, selling beer.
In fact,
they
belong to the same Jewish social club.
Yeah, exactly. And selling liquor still out of the back door of the liquor store to the community if you have exact change.
Yes.
And so the Star Tribune neglected to report that. And the other things that are going on in North Minneapolis, as far as like businesses closing, coffee shops, the doors are shut for a week almost, and stuff run by the Ackerberg Group. So, and also, I have out on the street, Mr. Edwards, to get the photos of the police running around in riot gear when people were looting Broadway Liquor Outlet. You know, they're trying to hunt them down like Al Qaeda. Hopefully we get some photos of that we can put up online.
Okay. By the way, as it pertains to that event that you're talking about, the looting that went on along Broadway and particularly that liquor store under the ownership of the gentleman you just mentioned, the mayor and others were so concerned for the safety of white businesses, because there are really no significant number of black businesses on Broadway from the river to the city limits, that police brought in extra barrels of tear gas and pepper gas, very strong pepper gas kind of thing. Kind of can really incapacitate you, and if you've got a problem with bronchitis, you may not make it. But they were concerned, and it was right after that and just before the arrival on the 22nd, late on the evening of the 22nd, of the lieutenant governor of the state of Minnesota, that actually the declaration was made making this a zone of martial law activity. And, you know, it really showed its hand the next day when curfew were declared. And, you know, unfortunately, Don, people didn't really recognize what was happening. And I really was disappointed that many in the black legal community, notwithstanding, you know, the fact that our two state and federal legislators didn't see the importance of saying anything, that the Black Lawyers Association, which, you know, has gala affairs and invites you to come and hear some speaker and spend $100 for a ticket or $200, they didn't say anything. And so people were not aware of what conditions, legal conditions, had been imposed in their neighborhood.
Yeah, not at all. There's no clue. And that's funny that you say that, Mr. Edwards, because we sat in a meeting where State Representative Bobby Joe Champion came in and didn't utter a word.
No, he didn't. And in fact, he had his red sweater on, and I was puzzled because I thought he was coming in to brief us, as federal Congressman Keith Ellison at least did, and designated a liaison from his office. But the state legislator never said anything, and then we never saw him again.
No, nowhere. Didn't see him anywhere doing anything. So that was kind of interesting. And, you know, they have a meeting coming up Monday at the University of Minnesota UROC facility in North Minneapolis to talk about the budget cut to the state's Human Rights Department. And that seems to be pretty interesting in lieu of what's going on here in North Minneapolis, that we're still going to focus and go in that direction when, you know, in my mind, the answer is simple how to solve that. But we'll get to that later on down in the show also.
Okay.
But moving along, again, our phone lines are open. The number is 877-572-4288. If you'd like to call in with a comment, suggestion, or topic, please go right ahead. Mr. Edwards.
And what we've started out talking about at the top of this program for both our domestic and international audience is the state of emergency martial law that has been declared in a specific area of North Minneapolis. It is martial law. Writ of habeas corpus has been suspended. For those out there that think that they are constitutionalists, if you will, feel free to examine us, if you will, on what we have just said, that there is a state of emergency. And once a state of emergency is declared, there are a number of constitutional guarantees that are suspended, if you will.
Yeah.
These all proper terms. There are a number of African Americans who have been arrested and detained. Some have been in jail for at least 13 days because the level, the threshold of a declaration such as that and then you being arrested is similar to if you were arrested for issuing terroristic threats. And actually in the United States, if you are arrested for terroristic threats, you do not have to receive bail.
No.
You can be held pending resolution or conclusion of the adjudication against you. And so there have been a number of young African Americans who have already been detained, and there is no prevailing mechanism short of an appeal by an attorney, a good attorney, to the federal court on the issue of suspension of habeas corpus, if you will. That's a very important federal doctrine for those in our both domestic and international audiences, Mr. Allen. That is a extremely important doctrine under Anglo-Saxon law, writ of habeas corpus. The right to be detained without violation of your constitutional rights, and et cetera. And we press that here because we are aware of what happened today. All day today, African Americans were ordered off the streets by machine gun toting paramilitary forces.
Yes, exactly. And when you look at that, you know, I've got, like I said, I got several calls, Mr. Edwards, from people just, you know, highly upset at the format that took place to get these people into North Minneapolis and the city of Minneapolis's interference to create a promotional atmosphere rather than a human needs service atmosphere. And this dates back to Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken, where the mayor's assistant, Sherman Patterson, had the Minnesota Lynx women's basketball team to appear at Shiloh International Ministries right down the street on West Broadway there to hand out bags and talk to people about the disaster, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And at no point was this promotion mentioned in the groups and the meetings we were met in until the day of.
And we were exactly by the by the path of the wolf, if you will, we were exactly 50 yards from the front door of Shiloh International Ministries. And, in fact, I met and talked with representatives of the Lynx yesterday, who unfortunately lost their opening game in Los Angeles. They'll be opening home season here tomorrow at 2:30. But I talked with them, and, of course, you understand the other thing was interesting about this. This is the first time that the Lynx / Timberwolves, really Timberwolves / Lynx, because the Lynx are actually owned by Taylor and the Minnesota Timberwolves. This is the first time they've really done anything at that level since about 1999 in the African-American community of North Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Since 1999. Kate Smith, the big white power forward for the Lynx had just come on board. So when I heard that, I wondered about that, but it's just like there was never any mention of the fact that they what later became a very contentious meeting of the minority contractors of Minnesota was taking place at the same time that we were meeting on Thursday. Mr. Allen and myself, though, raced to the site of the meeting, and it was interesting how much rancoredness emerged near the end when over half of the membership of the Minority Contractors Association, all black by and large, found out that they were not put on the list, which we first talked about here on Point a week ago today, the list that was prepared in which they were shut out, a list of general contractors and then a smaller group of subcontractors. And the head of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department Contract Compliance Unit, Johnny Burns, was present and would not answer any questions about the list.
No, not at all. And he was being very protected by Mr. Lewis King and the group there.
Talking about also at the Minority Contractors Association.
Oh yeah, that meeting. Oh,
yeah,
geez.
Yeah. He was still present when the debate the arguments broke out, and questions were asked by African-American contractors why they were jettisoned and not placed on the list. And the leadership of the Minority Contractors Association and their national president was there, and I think he was very uncomfortable with what was happening. But anyways, Mr. Burns also in that meeting was given a free pass.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was given a free pass.
By the way, story broke here on Point by Mr. Allen last week. His information was absolutely pure. Starting out on the 25th, if you will, Minneapolis Star Tribune in this city reported $166 million was expected, right?
Yes.
Mr. Allen interviewed our junior senator Al Franken, Democrat Minnesota, who via a video indicated that $16.9 million was what had been recommended by FEMA. By the way, now you and I have been in all these meetings. Why is it that there's the resistance also to not allow us to talk to FEMA?
I think that is because, Mr. Edwards, that they have the city officials talking to FEMA, and I think if they are let, if they're able to put two and two together, listen to this group and some of the people in the group, not necessarily the whole group, but some of the people within the group, and then listen to the rhetoric that the city of Minneapolis is telling them, I think that a whole different outcome would happen.
Okay.
I think they're that's well hid, and they're also being protected. And, you know, the city, you know, has been talking to FEMA on a regular basis. We're just not privileged to get any of that information, and none of that information is distributed.
Oh, there's no doubt about that, because we first talked about that on this blog program, the blog program that comes on Sunday, Black Focus Blog Radio, that there have been numerous meetings with FEMA's representatives starting actually on the late evening of the 22nd, the day of the storm. We repeat again by the early morning of the 23rd, the very early morning of the 23rd, of May, that federal officials were here prepared to do what needed to be done, and they already were being given the shopping list that totaled $166 million. And, of course, the federal authorities indicated that wasn't going to happen and, you know, came up with the figure that they needed. And, by the way, that figure, that money has to be split between Hennepin and Anoka County, and it has to be split with the municipalities of St. Louis Park, Minneapolis, Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park, Fridley, Blaine, and the way we've done that, if you notice, is followed the path of the tornado. All those communities must get a piece of that action. And also, Mr. Allen, I want to be sure that the listening audience knows that we raised the question about the right of return. The city of Minneapolis has within its civil rights ordinance a provision that talks about the right of return of citizens of the class of minorities and et cetera, affected class. Mr. Christensen, who was required to answer that question, Mr. King and others said they didn't know anything about it, couldn't answer it, but Mr. was in the room. And what basically has happened is that black people are not being told that they have a right of return. And so we're going to have a repeat of what happened after black folk were forced out of public housing in this town a little over a decade ago.
Well, Mr. Evans, I want to ask you a question here real quick. You know, the martial law thing that's happening now in North Minneapolis, have you seen that any time before in your history here in the Twin Cities?
Yes, I did. In the civil uprising of 1966, the summer of 1966, then Mayor Arthur Naftalin, a Democrat, and really a good man, a good mayor, but he was forced to because of the burning and uprising and gun battles and et cetera that took place in Minneapolis during that particular, in the days leading up, if you will, he had to request the activation of National Guard units, and basically these National Guard units were from all white towns in rural Minnesota. And over 1,000 Minnesota National Guard poured into North Minneapolis in the summer of 1966, and we were under martial law for 4 days.
Yeah, wow. Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, and I'm talking about real kind of martial law. I'm talking about Jeeps carrying 50 and 30 caliber machine guns. I'm talking about young white National Guardsmen armed with the weapons of that particular day with a rifle, carbine, fixed bayonets, and et cetera. They were deployed on every corner from Lyndale to the east to the area there at the city boundary there where the bridge is at leading into Worth Parkway. And we had curfews. People had to show identification, and because the martial law had been declared, your home could be entered without warrant. In other words,
yeah,
without cause. And this was happening. There was a lot of friction. In fact, at one point, they were thinking that maybe it would have to be deployed also to South Minneapolis, but the target of concern was North Minneapolis. So to your question, Mr. Allen, yes, 1966, we had a declaration of martial law in North Minneapolis, and the National Guard was deployed. Over 1,000 National Guardsmen came in.
Wow. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, and then also, you know, Mr. Edwards, you were talking about the $166 million figure that the city of Minneapolis came up with, which actually set a lot of things in motion because people thought they were going to get in line for a slice of this $166 million. And you had organizations popping up everywhere. Matter of fact, in the meetings, Mr. Edwards, that we go to, there are organizations that are popping up that I've never heard of, okay?
Absolutely.
And we're wondering, you know, one of the things that we do well is follow the money. And right now, and I want to just get into this a little bit, right now from a report yesterday from representatives from the Minneapolis Foundation, there is so a little bit over $700,000 raised.
$750,000, they said.
$750,000. Raised. Of course, not all the money has been received by the Minneapolis Foundation, but we also know that General Mills have put up $100,000. We know that the city of Minneapolis, per Don, Councilman Ward 5, Don Samuels, has said there's $40,000 put up. And then we know there's another $90,000 that has already been paid out. So with that said, there's an organization that is actually paying out the money for the tarping, the patchwork, to contractors for uninsured homes, and
which was important, Mr. Allen, if you could read the name there off the computer. One of the things I found fascinating, and this did not, we were not able to crack this to hammer into the existence this Stelted organization, which actually has almost the same exact name as the organization that Mr. Allen and I have been sitting in their meetings. And by the way, Mr. Allen, you know, yesterday we were told that sometime in August we will be required to sign a loyalty oath.
Yes, yes. And see,
I mean, really, to our listeners, we were told that in order to continue to be in attendance at these meetings, we would have to sign a loyalty oath and a non-disclosure. So if we heard, you know, conversations of corruption and et cetera, which, as example, caused Mr. Allen and myself, as example, our licenses and et cetera, we are to swear that we will not reveal that information. I find that to be rather distasteful, to say the least. But then back to the organization. I think it was on Wednesday, Mr. Allen, if I'm not mistaken, we began to find out there was a ghost organization which already has contractual authority and monies, and they're the ones that were paying Thor Construction and some of those folks, weren't they?
Yeah, they were paying OBAT Construction, Tri Construction, I'm looking at the passing shoves for the Northside Community Response Team here, and it has Summit OIC, and you know that OBAT is part of Summit OIC.
Yeah.
So, excuse me, with that said, yes, this ghost organization that just popped up was definitely shelling out dollars.
And by the way, Tri Construction is the company of the man who is the brother of Miss Littlejohn, who is the point person for Mortenson, who is controlling, along with three or four other major white general contractors, the flow of all money into the African-American community through relief efforts in North Minneapolis, Tri Construction. In fact, we talked about Tri Construction last year with respect to their role on the TCF Stadium, which also included allegedly working with Summit.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I'm just sitting here, I'm looking at the Northside Community Response Team, and, you know, they have Mike Christian, Becky Boland, who's a young lady that's supposed to give us information about FEMA, but, you know, has to leave and never really.
Let's just, so that people don't think that we're nitpicking.
Okay.
Friday before last, she was being asked to give a report about FEMA, what had been requested. We had previously asked for, could we get a copy of the application, in that basically everybody that sits in the meeting's got a computer in front of them. She jumped up and said, she's a very flighty Caucasian woman. She jumped up and said that her nephew was graduating tonight somewhere in, you know, North Dakota or something like that. She had to go. Yesterday, just as she was being asked to give a update on FEMA and some other things, she pretended to receive something on her iPod and jumped up and said she had a sick child and that she had to go, and, you know, was allowed to actually walk out of the door and tell us basically nothing. Now, this is the so-called liaison between this committee that Mr. Allen and myself are participating with actually about 55, 56 other people, probably a grand total of about 70, because we've had some people that have come but did not come back. This is the committee that, and by the way, for those that want to follow it, there will be a press conference at 2 o'clock on Monday, in which there will be this attempt to, you know, glorify kind of and talk in terms of what this committee is doing. And, you know, tell you the truth, Don, though, I've been sitting there in every meeting and there from, you know, beginning to end, I'm still trying to figure out what it is we're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, Mr. Edwards, we want to let our local and our domestic and international listeners know that we will have a live broadcast via Verizon during that show. I call it a show, but it's supposed to be a press conference.
The press conference.
Yes.
Yes.
So.
Thank you.
But,
that's certainly needed, particularly in that, you know, we're being told we have to sign loyalty oaths and things like that. I mean, one of the things that's really happened here, and I've said it already in some other mediums, is that it's kind of been a combination like of a meeting of the Knights of the Mystic Sea on one hand and a briefing at the Pentagon on the other. I mean, we're very militaristic, if you will.
Yeah.
We use very militaristic terms. And now, you know, you get a better understanding based on what's happened today to African-Americans in the disaster zone. that, you know, really we are controlled by military or militaristic individuals, some who actually carry rank in the armed services.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's been kind of interesting, you know, and we hear certain statements that are very militaristic. I mean, I haven't heard those kind of statements since the days at the War College, if you will.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. That's,
yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So we were talking, there was a minute ago, about the $166 million setup by the city, and that activated all these ghost organizations. But yet, and this is an interesting point, we have the Northwest Area Foundation, Gary Cunningham, who also sits on the Met Council. We have the Stair Step Foundation. We have, the African American Leadership Forum and Summit.
Not yet. You haven't mentioned that yet. That's
okay.
Right. Which is also controlled by, well, wait a minute. Because actually we have two organizations that have now carried the name of African American Leadership or something like that. One is headed by the Ecumenical Community, and the other one is headed by people who are affiliated with corporations, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. And so with that said, you know, I was reading again last night, late last night, actually early this morning, a press release that the Northwest Area Foundation sent out about solving poverty, that they're on this mission to, and they're solving poverty left and right in the Twin Cities and all across the country. I mean, they're in it knee deep. And it's funny.
Particularly in eastern Washington in the Yakima Valley. Go right ahead.
Yeah, you know, the Yakima Valley is basically a desert. So,
mm-hmm.
But anyway, I am looking at, you know, these meetings. I'm saying this would be a prime opportunity for the poverty-solving Northwest Area Foundation and the African-American Leadership Forum or Summit, whatever they want to be right now, to step forward and get involved, because there's a mass exodus of 12,000-plus black people from North Minneapolis.
Absolutely.
There's, you know, I was looking at the 2006 North Minneapolis Asset Report.
Now, it's 2006. Right. There you go. Make sure we give that 2006.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can Google North Minneapolis Asset Report. It was done by the University of Minnesota. Very detailed. It explains all about North Minneapolis. And what it said is there's roughly 67,000 people in North Minneapolis. There's 25,000 children under 5 years old in
mm-hmm.
North Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The percentage is 41% African American. Okay.
How much again?
41%.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm.
2006 North Minneapolis Asset Report. And so I'm looking at a lot of variables and derivatives, because now the Minneapolis Public Schools, you know, the money follows the students, Mr. Edwards. So if you have 12,000 men, women, and children, and school-age children, I got to throw in there, that are being relocated to Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park, Anoka, Richfield, and in some cases St. Paul, they're not going to come back to North Minneapolis, and of course, if their situation is better, where they're being relocated at.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these students, they can't even find them, you know?
That's right. And by the way, again, for transparency, that issue came up in the meeting yesterday, that many cannot be found, if you will. It had to do with a question that we here posed, that Mr. Christensen, Mike Christensen, did have to answer about the issue of right of return. And one of the organizations that has been operating in North Minneapolis actually for some time pointed out that they have already determined that a significant number of African Americans and children cannot be found. Now, we already know that a series of meetings over the last couple of days in the northern suburbs, in other words, Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, Crystal, New Hope, Robbinsdale, Golden Valley has been meeting. The administrators, city managers have been meeting, talking in terms of how to make sure that these Negroes don't come as a part of a permanent class of residents. Now, New Hope is an example. Let's just use the community of New Hope, which is a predominantly Caucasian suburb in the so-called inner circle. They actually condemned a 135-unit apartment complex that was all African-Americans a couple years ago. next to the municipal golf course, and what they said was that the buildings had become dilapidated, but there was no right of return, and all those African Americans were dispersed without any opportunity, and they lost their Section 8 vouchers, if you will. Now, New Hope has already indicated that they have no intention of letting an influx of displaced Negroes, or as they were called in New Orleans, and I heard this term used here, refugees.
The refugees, yes.
Yes, right. That term has been used here in meetings, very kind of clandestine meetings, referring to African-Americans and African-American children as refugees, which is really very insulting, but which first emerged after Katrina. Now, by the way, on the Katrina situation, have you detected that there's some friction between some of, quote-unquote, our leadership and the Salvation Army?
Yes, there's a quite a bit of tension between the two because, well, yes, Mr. Edwards, to answer your question, there is some tension, and I don't think it's going away anytime soon.
Now, on that one, I was wondering, does it go back to the days of when we allegedly here were mounting such a humanitarian effort on behalf of the beleaguered, soon to be pushed out people of New Orleans, particularly African Americans, and the fact that many of the declarations that were being made here, particularly by some segments, notice what I said, some segments of the African American ecumenical community was actually not being carried out. In other words, assets, resources, and et cetera that were supposed to be deployed, I hate to use these military terms, to New Orleans never took place.
Exactly.
And are we correct on it? Do we have a call coming in or someone trying to come in on us on back line?
They're trying, but it's not going to work.
Okay.
Gotcha.
No, we do not have a call. Go ahead, Mr. Edwards.
We have a call?
No, we don't. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. So basically what happened was that there was a lot of questions about what happened to a lot of resources that were donated by the good citizens of Minnesota, Wisconsin, probably more Minnesota and the Dakotas. Wisconsin basically was routing their materials through Madison and Milwaukee. But we here in Twin Cities were getting a lot of stuff. In fact, there was a company put together, and, you know, somebody raised the question yesterday, and I was amused by the response of one of members of the ecumenical. Do you remember Kingdom Oil?
Yes.
And for our listeners, Kingdom Oil was a company that came out of nowhere and really wound up handling all of the or much of the resources and gifts and monies and things like that. And I never could quite understand because I haven't heard of Kingdom Oil since then.
Okay. Well, you know, Kingdom Oil, Mr. Edwards, is run by the attorney, Jay Bennett, who has been a significant player in particular guided funding to agencies that he feels really good and his company feels good about. I know that there's a church on Glenwood, I think it's True Love by True Vine or True Love Church on not Plymouth, on Glenwood Avenue, that he helped them put together their 501c3, got it funded. And not only that, you're familiar with Mr. Lenny Chisholm and the Springboard Development Corporation.
Yes, I am.
Mr. Jay Bennett was very instrumental in putting that together based off what Mr. Chisholm was going to go after, the MnDOT dollars and looking at these discrepancies in the minority workforce. And Mr. Jay Bennett, a Caucasian male, older, just, you know, he says, we need somebody out there that's doing it. But their main focus at Kingdom Oil is to stay out of the mess right now.
Oh, I see.
You know?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so they're not going to get too involved in what's that, man, with this, because players at the table that don't have the intellectual capacity of a bumblebee and want to get.
Well, now don't say bumblebee. Find something else, because a bumblebee can make honey.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot.
That's right.
But, you know,
and honey is nutritional. Go ahead.
But there's some significant things at play right now, Mr. Edwards, because of the simple fact is there's $750,000 available for allocation from the Minneapolis Foundation. There's another $100,000 sitting somewhere. If this thing goes on, like Hurricane Katrina and funding and donations and charitable contributions, this thing has the possibility of growing a $5 million head. Okay?
And we have, by the way, we've been told in committee that this is a 36-month operation, which is rather interesting. 3 years.
And 36 months is too far out by estimate. If you look at things going on, I talked to someone from New Orleans who says he could take me to some areas that look like a tornado hit yesterday, still today, on the June 6th today, June 4th today, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what, are you kidding? And that 36-month plan gives people enough time to lay back in the cut, build money, because you see, Mr. Edwards, there's no one talking about the derivatives and the variables of this almost $1 million, because if you put that much money in the bank and it's sitting there, the interest compounded daily, monthly, yearly is incredible to those foundations.
Okay.
As long as they keep getting the money in. But my point is, I talked to Miss Karen, who's a really nice lady. She follows us on our blogs and on Blog Talk Radio, and she won't say publicly what she agrees or disagrees with, but she asked me my opinion. She was really concerned. And I said, here goes the deal. I said, you have several agencies at the table. Not one agency can do anything well, okay? But you have a smaller agency that might be able to give out butt tokens. So they got church or something like that. Then you have United Pillsbury Communities, or United Communities Pillsbury, however she has it these days. Pillsbury United Communities, you have them. Well, this is more of a social cabal rather than a functioning nonprofit to me, because it's about who you are, your status, and your class, rather than serving the people. So they're going to have to get past that point. But my point to Ms. Karen was that before you give a nickel out, you have to make sure that these people have the intellectual capacity and process to make sure there's nobody gets dropped through the loop.
Let me say something on that, Mr. Allen, because I had the opportunity to be at a dinner meeting last night. I'm not going to reveal and discuss who the players were that are there, but one of the individuals is a person that is a very heavy hitter in the world of investments and et cetera. And one of the things that they said at this dinner meeting was that one of the problems that people were having right now, particularly with us bloggers, us black bloggers, was that we are not traditionally supposed to be at the table. That, in fact, folks work very hard to make sure that some of us are never allowed at the table. And to have heard this coming from the particular individual wasn't necessarily surprising or but it was somewhat startling to hear that kind of discussion is going on, because I know that you and I were both told that we were a part of the weeds doctrine. The weeds doctrine being, you know, African Americans, Negroes, whatever, who quote unquote allegedly hide in the weeds and then come up with
situations
and raise questions. Getting a little feedback there.
Okay, I got it.
And so what I understand based on what you're just saying is that a decision is already being made on who is going to be purged from the committee. So I just wanted to kind of give you a heads up on that. Go ahead.
I mean, I'm looking at that, and, I received an email that said, you're not really wanted at the table. Some people don't want you there. And this is me personally, because I am attacking people. And that's far from the point. Is if there are human needs out there, and I made my point clearly on several different blog posts on the Independent Business News Network. I said, if there are people out there with needs, okay, you have to have a plan in place. No one's talking about the rebuilding and getting the black people that have 12,000 plus that have lost their sanctuaries or places to live back into the battalion headquarters area of North Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have anybody talking about the housing trust or the land bank that the
land trust, land bank. Yes.
At the city of Minneapolis, you know, they want to get all these lots and houses for a buck and then build houses worth $200,000, which push them out of the reach of the citizens that live in North Minneapolis pre-tornado. But the point is, there was a storm in North Minneapolis before the tornado. It was an economic storm. It was a unemployment storm. It was a racist storm. I mean, a denial of services, opportunities, education. I mean, it was worse than any tornado could be. But it took this act of God or this tornado to come in and kind of put it front and center. But you have the same hustlers, pimps, and clergy on the front burner, you know, because they heard, first heard, like I said a few minutes ago, they heard $166 million. Oh, there's enough for everybody. We can do our usual thing, get $200,000 and walk away and never do a service. Okay?
Correct. Correct.
So with that said, we have to watch and make sure that these people aren't at the table doing this and with no successful, miserable outcomes. But anyway, getting back to Ms. Karen and talking to her from the Minneapolis Foundation, I said that you have to make sure before you give $1 to any of these folks, there's a plan in place. That's bulletproof. The day before, on Thursday, I had an opportunity to sit right next to County Commissioner Mark Stengelein,
mm-hmm.
who was very concerned about the mass exodus of North Minneapolis, of
yep.
black people. Very concerned, very distraught, you know. And I told him, I says, you know, the county's been funding some of the usual suspects for years who have never made it to the table, more particularly the Stir-Step Foundation. And haven't said anything, and one of their goals is to provide outreach and resources, okay? But yet, from our 200 nonprofits in North Minneapolis, in the geographical area doing business in North Minneapolis, you know, you don't see one poster of a person of color that might be a professional hanging on a bus shelter that said, I helped 13 kids get their teeth cleaned today. You never know of these successful, measurable outcomes. You know, like the United Way does that all the time. When they have
Correct.
A great campaign and they raise millions of dollars, not only do they give the money out, they go back and find the agencies they gave the money to and say, hey, let's find out your successful, measurable outcomes. Then they have a budget to advertise this to the general public, which creates a cash flow into the United Way that is perpetual, keeps going. What we have in North Minneapolis is we have to figure out the ongoing concern, which is a financial legal term, of these agencies. So if you give Pillsbury United Communities $50,000 to address people that have lost their home, maybe to help with first and last month's rent, is this money going to be used in the general budget to pay salaries? Because right now what's happening when these agencies get money, Mr. Edwards, 80 and in some cases 90% of that funding goes to staff salaries.
Yeah, well, let me just say this, Don, on that particular point. And again, I would encourage folk to go back and listen to On Demand, our program of last Saturday, because one of the things that Mr. Allen said just minutes ago is that when the issue came up about how was there going to be, you know, any guarantees, statutory in nature, that African Americans were going to be a part of the, you know, stimulus, revitalization of the community, basically Mr. Allen was cut off. And later on I heard that reports had been made back that was not to be allowed to be discussed. Now, last week on these programs, we referred to a very damaging document. In fact, it's a research commissioned by the city at a cost of $500,000 to the taxpayers of the city of Minneapolis, called the Disparity Report. Took 5 years for them to get it together because it took that long for the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department to manufacture numbers. But we gave a couple of pages, and let us repeat those pages again, which went to the heart. And, in fact, actually, Mr. Allen and I were using a rather interesting strategy last Saturday because we thought that we would be able to encourage people to go into a dialogue this week as we set through five or six meetings and watch what I consider to be a military control mechanism at play. But we pointed out that in the disparity study issued in October of 2010 by the city, by the way, there was really never a public hearing held on it, that at pages 15, 68, 121, 156 through 170, page 205 and page 236 of the disparity study, is the heart and soul of why it is that African Americans will not be allowed to be involved in the revitalization and the rebuilding of North Minneapolis, and why they are being purged from the community. That caused a white county commissioner, Mark Stengelein, to to stand up in a meeting, indicate that, and not a single agency of color, not a single agency of color, asked him if he would expand that reflection. Am I correct, Mr. Howard?
You are correct.
Now, to me, that was a heartbreaking situation because these agencies have fed off of the existence, number one, in some cases, the misery of the African-American population, and not a single one stood up and said, Commissioner, can you tell us, I mean, what does this mean? How bad is it? And I watched his face, Mr. Allen, when he said that, and it was right after that, he just turned around and left in disgust, because I could see his face, and he's looking at all these hustlers. He's looking at all these people who are driving nice new big cars, living in nice homes way out, if you will, and not a single person stood up and said, well, could you just elaborate a little bit more, Commissioner, how serious this is?
Ms. Edwards, we have a call.
Let's get him.
You're live on the air. Who's calling? Hello? Hello, you're live on the air.
Got the radio on.
Yeah, maybe you could try it again. You're live on the air. Who's calling?
They can't get it together.
Maybe they'll call back.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, their computer.
So, I speak about that in to some degree in a column for next week in my column in the Spokesman Recorder, though that situation had not taken place at the time that I put the story together. But I say in my column for next week that there are some things that are present that have to be disturbing with respect to the regentrification and gentrification that is taking place and the future of the African-American, not only in Minneapolis but in the Twin Cities. But I keep that in mind, Mr. Allen. I mean, when he made that statement, he talked in terms of 12,000 black people that had been displaced and et cetera, and not a single one of the so-called big agency heads, we call them the big heads, if you will, didn't say a mumbling word.
Nothing.
Didn't say anything at all. So,
Go ahead. Then again, Mr. Harris, I think that goes around with relationships. It's like, okay, I have to think of Pillsbury United Community. What relationship do they have? Can they pick up the phone to the Minneapolis Foundation and say, hey, we need $350,000 of that $700,000 to get our operation going?
No. Well, there was a time they could do that under the previous director, Tony Wagner. I'm not sure that the current director has anything approaching that kind of savvy or clout or et cetera, but then that's their problem. But then on the other side of the aisle, it becomes the problem of the community because we do not have the necessary clout that this community, the black community, has earned. You know, you earn a little bit after 100 years of being around in a place. You know what I'm saying, Mr. Allen? There are certain things you kind of earn. It goes back to the movie A Few Good Men when the black adjutant, Marine brother, was presiding, and he told Jack Nicholson, I think I have earned that, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the black population, the black community, the sons and daughters of the African have certainly earned that, but I don't see our community getting any respect.
No, not at all. Not at all. It's very interesting what's going on in the whole the situation. Well, now it seems like, too, the Council of Churches is at the table, Bruce Bork, and they're suggesting that funds go to the Council of Churches to be distributed out.
Well, that means it'll be distributed through the quote-unquote black churches and the Black Ministerial Alliance.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know, that will be interesting, if you will. It's interesting, the emergence or the appearance, because at one point, a couple weeks ago, I was being told that Bruce Bork was going to be moving on to a position in St. Paul, possibly with the Catholic Archdiocese or the Lutheran diocese. So I'm surprised to hear that supposedly he's a player on the Council of Churches, because I know that Jerry Ryerson, the head of the Council of Churches, is not really very keen on the black community right now. In fact, he's let it be known that his emphasis is the Hispanic, Latino, Mexicans, and the Somalis.
Yes, exactly.
And so I'm a little puzzled on how Mr. Ryerson has had kind of a change of heart, and the Council of Churches, oops, have had a change of heart because they had basically let it be known in the powerful, I'm talking about the powerful white ecumenical circles, that the Negro, Black, / African-American community was kind of at the bottom of the racial totem pole. Now, that, you know, that always at the top is the white community. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, in this progression, if that's what you want to call it, the African-Americans are basically are being dismissed as almost impotent.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I have to agree with some of that because, I mean, you have agencies like the Minneapolis Urban League. Okay, Mr. Edwards, we know that in 2010 they had received a grant for $150,000 from the Minnesota Department of Transportation to create a highway heavy workforce program.
Right.
We were at, Mr. Edwards, you and I yesterday was at a building that does highway heavy training, which is a $5 million a year operation.
Mm-hmm.
So $150,000 does not even scratch the surface to even create a program like that. Now, we also know the Urban League in 2010 received a $300,000 grant from Microsoft for computer labs, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Still to this day, there's no outside off, how can I put this? There's no outside draw or building of capacity or attention to what that program's even doing. And some insiders say that, oh, they use that in the general fund to pay people that were working in the computer lab, okay, which is, I mean, it's okay, but still, you know, you have to find out before any of this money goes out, this money is not to go into the banks of these agencies and then go to pay salaries unless someone is actually involved in day-to-day intake, assessment, human needs assessment, and solutions, okay? And that's the only way that I could see that. So if you're not operating above, well, I shouldn't say above board, but in the black, where you can take this money and actually still function, then the Minneapolis Foundation and others in Hennepin County have to scrutinize what's going on.
Well, you're absolutely correct. And in the case of the Urban League, at one time they had a very powerful labor education advancement program. They were the sweethearts, in fact, for many years, particularly during the lifetime of the legendary labor leader Nellie Stone Johnson, who, by the way, for you know, folks make a mistake and get disjointed, that she was one of the co-founders of what is now called the DFL, Democratic Farmer Labor Party. She was one of the signatories to the merger of the Democratic Party and the Farmer Labor Party in 1944. And she was a longtime protege and friend of then mayor and later United States Senator Hubert Humphrey. She and the legendary Cecil Newman were the greatest of friends, worked together on many issues and et cetera. And so for over a decade and a half, the LEAP program was just the cornerstone. And its record clearly shows that there was success after success after success. That did not mean that there weren't major battles and that there were not adversaries and obstacles to that. Unfortunately, in the last 10 years, the program has basically, you know, disappeared. In fact, the $150,000 that you talk about was actually a part of trying to rekindle that after the individual who had been the head of the program for a number of years ultimately retired. And I've watched closely, as people have talked about over the last couple of years, actually the October 2010 diversity study, or disparity study, really, lack of diversity, certainly clarified something that we had been saying as a journalist and historian about what was happening, how the African-American community was being just pushed totally out the door of economic and marketplace opportunity. And, you know, Mr. Allen, what happened was the tornado of May 22nd, 2011 really exposed the deep wounds that had been inflicted upon the African-American community in Minneapolis and by extension across the state. And I don't know if that was the hand of God or if that was the hand of Satan, if you understand how I'm putting it.
Mm-hmm.
But whoever hand was at play, what it has done is it exposed what people – such as yourself and myself and a small group of others have been saying for a long time, and that some of our callers talked about last Saturday in the call-ins. It's been exposed, and it's ugly. But as County Commissioner Mark Stanglein said, it's frightening. It's chilling. I heard a young individual a week or so ago repeated last night at this private dinner, who said that this may be the last hurrah for the African-American community in Minneapolis, not only North Minneapolis, but in Minneapolis. I hate to even subscribe to that, Mr. Allen, but I'm just not sure that it could be a prophecy, a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Give the number out again. I'm interested to see what the thinking is, because I don't know, maybe this state of martial law has shut down everything, including telephone lines.
Yeah, and if you're listening in and you'd like to voice your opinion or talk about a particular subject concerning this or about what we're discussing right now, you can dial 877-572-4288. Again, that number is 877-572-4288. And you're listening to On Point, broadcasting live from the McIntosh Studios in downtown Minneapolis. Mr. Edwards.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
We're going to have to look at this because while, you know, we want someone to muster up enough nerves to call, but I'm looking at some other news here that's going on in downtown Minneapolis. And I know about a month ago when they had the shootings down there and the different things that were going on, they were pointing at Karma Nightclub.
Yes.
And now it looks like the city council wants to close the Karma Nightclub for 90 days while they decide if they're going to revoke their liquor license and other things.
Well, let us give you a little bit of history as it pertains to what really, unfortunately, is at play. Unfortunately, the race issue. And one of the so-called co-owners of Karma, and by the way, that particular group that the individual, Ms. Bowers, is affiliated with, owns four or five other clubs downtown. They control a lot of property, including Butler Square. Oops. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he said he put the race card in play. He's, you know, a Caucasian person, former police officer, by the way, in Brooklyn Park a number of years ago before he left the department to become an entrepreneur. Well, know him, know who he is. By the way, Channel 4, as we speak, I've turned on monitors here in Studio A, showing the damage, 3,700 properties damaged, 1,882 homeless, blah, blah, blah. CCO's got a little Asian reporter out there, and she's Slavic. She's talking in terms of what a wonderful job is being done. People may want to recapture it at 6 o'clock. But anyways, back to Karma. One of the things that the co-owner says in this morning's edition, again, of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, so that no one can say that Ron and Don made something up. Oh, yes, here are pictures of, oh, man, white volunteers. I don't see any people of color. But anyways, we'll deal with that later. What happened was that it had been proposed to him quietly by the chief license inspector, who is also a police lieutenant, that one of the things that he probably needed to do was to change his music selection. Now, we all know all around the country that's the prima facie for saying we got too many black folk in here, we want to get rid of them, so we'll change the music. We saw it with a club called Taffy's here 30 years ago that was located, for those that remember, in the Flochet Tower. Beautiful club in there. The folks got to the place where it was just too many black folk coming around, you know, with the white girls and et cetera. And so Taffy's was put out of business when the folks said, you know, the music is disturbing the clients here in the Flochet Tower. So what happened was Karma was told that if they changed the music to you know, country, you know what I'm saying, that there wouldn't be any problem because that would fit in with all the other clubs by and large along, particularly along First Ave and to a lesser degree Hennepin and et cetera. And there's been a lot of complaints from the white bars down there, which really don't want the black clientele, and their position is that because Karma doesn't open until 10 and then, you know, closes at 2:30, that a lot of young Negroes come downtown and want to stop in their establishments, and it's just not the right fit. I mean, the right words are being used, Mr. Allen. Mm-hmm. And so the owners of Karma you know, rebuked the suggestion, if you will. And then they got themselves caught in a bind because one of the things that they had not done, we have a policy here in our city in which black police officers are not allowed to work, black police officers now, are not allowed to work overtime in clubs or do what they call buybacks and et cetera. And what happened, some black officers approached Karma and talked in terms of helping with the problem. There was a squad of young black officers that could handle anything, and, you know, the black senior officers, this is what I'm picking up now from legal sources, the black senior officers were told that, you know, that the owners of Karma had been told by the License Inspection Bureau in the chief's office that they didn't want no black officers hired, and that's been one of the great problems because the white officers are you know, terrified when things really get out of control. And, I mean, last year, and we talked about this on this program, anybody wants to call it up in July of last year, I talked to you about, I was present when a massive confrontation took place right outside of the front door of the first precinct right there on Third Ave, if you will. I mean, they fought. You couldn't get nobody to come out of the police station. So bottom line, what has happened is that it is the intent of the city council to, in fact, impose a 90-day sanction, though there will be a heck of a court fight. And it's clear that the owners of Karma intend to invoke race and indicate that they have had some real sensitive discussions about the fact that African-Americans are not wanted in downtown Minneapolis and that Karma has become, quote-unquote, the black flagship. Oops, not to be confused with the Black Lion and Marcus Garvey. But anyways, has been identified as the black flagship and that it is a blight. Notice the word we used. It is a blight upon the whiteness of downtown Minneapolis, and it has to go.
Okay, Ms. Evers, we have a caller.
Oh, let's see if we can get him.
You're live on the On Point. Who am I speaking with?
Brothers, how you doing? This is Ralph Crowder again, man.
Crowder, how are you?
Ralph, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing excellent, brother. I just wanted to get y'all's take on the situation. I seem to kind of tune in a little late, so I'm not sure if y'all already talked about this or not, but I wanted to see your take on last Sunday's Star Tribune edition and a few of the placements of specific articles, and if you maybe get your thoughts on kind of the visual and what these articles kind of make a story out of the current situation as a result of the tornado on the north side. This is last Sunday's edition, so that would be May 29th.
Yes.
The title, the cover page, there's an article right underneath the cover story where it says the tornado assault baffles science. But right underneath that, there's an article that says their risk, his reward. And it talks about the subtitle is longtime landlord finds new business opportunities at bottom of city's real estate market. And it talked about a retired Minneapolis police officer who bought 30 troubled, quote, you know, the 30 troubled homes on the north side for $775,000.
The headline is entitled "Their Risk, His Reward."
Right. I did say that. Yep.
Yeah.
And that was
the title. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it talks about how he turned his $775,000 investment and the $2.3 million from 2006 to 2010. And basically, a lot of his dealings were through the real estate thing where it's a contract for deed arrangement.
Right. Now, by the way, for transparency for our audiences, you're talking about a man by the name of Robert M. Anderson.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, that's right. You're talking about Mr. Anderson, well-known to some of us. But go ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, I thought it was really interesting at the time, you know, because the paper, you know, it's a story, too. You know, it's like the movies. I thought it was a real interesting title, Their Risk, His Reward, and it kind of just led the reader to kind of really look at a possible, possible interest in the Northside property damage as a result of the tornado and maybe some of the benefits that some have had through their real estate investments. But then also, on the business section of the same edition of the same paper, on the Sunday section, the business headline read "Rental Renaissance."
Yeah.
And the subtitle was, "With home ownership declining and renting on the rise, the metro area is on the verge of an apartment boom, especially in Minneapolis." Right?
Yeah.
Right.
And that's in the business section. Now, same paper, same day, in the metro section, it says on the right-hand side, "Tornado test plan for homelessness."
Oops.
So, you know what I'm saying? I just really want to get y'all's, the paper is amazing. You know what I'm saying? That's why we got to read it, because, I mean, they do send out coded messaging in the paper. And I just wanted to see what, I know you guys have been talking about it, but maybe even talk a little further about just the real dire condition, man, of the situation of the tornado, that people are renters, they really don't have insurance, and there's just going to be a mess. And I've already heard y'all make, conversation about the displacement issue, especially even as it affects the Minneapolis Public Schools financial situation. But,
absolutely.
I mean, it's really interesting, man, that we're not hearing, besides yourself and a couple other people in the media, really talk about the real issues that are happening out there, and the people that position themselves a lot of times to be those people that talk about how we are experiencing problems as the people are very silent right now. And, you know, hopefully you guys will still stay on the point like you are and deal with that and really make light out of the dark situation, because I really think the community really doesn't really understand exactly what's going to happen. And if you pick up and read the paper, I mean, they're just foreshadowing everything for you, line by line, section by section. So
I agree.
Just
all
wanted
right.
to put that out there.
All right, appreciate it. And we will deal over the next number of minutes with what you see. Sometimes we have to have someone raise the question, because it's always interesting, and we as radio commentators, we must weigh where we think, unfortunately or fortunately, people are with respect to paying attention to what's going on. But you see, these stories, Ralph, are being positioned because the folks, they researched what it is we've done. Mr. Allen pointed it out last week that we're at the bottom of the totem pole with respect to internet capabilities and et cetera. And then you had the whole internet system in zone 2 and 3 torn apart. And so folks are aware that our people, unfortunately, are not fully cognizant and not on top of their game. And so what do communities do? They depend upon their leadership.
Community leaders. Community leaders.
To provide a safety net, and et cetera. Only thing these leaders are doing is putting rocks on the tarpon and putting it on top of the folks and letting them sink to the bottom. But we will deal with this. Thank you.
All right, brother. Peace.
All right.
Okay, thank you. And, Ms. Edwards, while we answer that for Ralph, we have another caller on the line.
Let's get him in. The callers are important. Let's get them.
You're live on the air, caller. Hello. That same caller.
That sounds like exactly the same background from the call that wasn't there. Apparently they're having some problem being able to connect. But let us move into the subject matter, Mr. Allen. The previous caller has raised a rather interesting question. I thought it was a well-designed Minneapolis Star Tribune propaganda piece. I found it fascinating, and what he said is correct. What the Star Tribune was basically saying is that here's an opportunity for white profit on the backs of black misery and displacement, and that's really what the article said. It was just interesting how they positioned the articles, including tornado test plan for homelessness. By the way, one of the things that the county's representatives forgot to say, and we're still supposed to be waiting on top-notch people, was that the county already admitted to FEMA in a document sent back to FEMA's Washington headquarters that, man, we have no plan whatsoever for a disaster of this magnitude inside the city of Minneapolis.
Yes.
And, in fact, raised the question that they thought, based on the resources that Minneapolis allegedly have, that the city of Minneapolis should really have been able to take care of this. That's why they are keeping us away from a meaningful and transparent dialogue with FEMA.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to, I think next week is going to be designated as Turn Up the Heat Week, you know, because we need some answers. And I don't know about you, Mr. Ellis, but I'm pretty tired of listening to this rhetoric and drawings on the wall. And when you ask a question, you get sidelined. And
stories pertaining to, and by the way, June 6th, day after tomorrow, will be the day that American forces stormed ashore at Normandy, right?
Yes.
June 6th. And, you know, maybe that's the appropriate time in that we're being so militarized that we need to play like we're storming Omaha Beach.
I agree 100%
yeah. on that. Yeah, but again, to the caller who took the time to, and I know that's been something on his mind and et cetera, I mean, he's absolutely correct. People, if they can do it, need to go back, take a look at the story. Their risk, his reward, if you will. In fact, the subtitle, Longtime Landlord Finds New Business Opportunities. Now, get this, at bottom of city's real estate market. See, here's a phrase that I've heard, and I know that some of our black African listeners understand where we're coming from. In the period of time, 15, 16 years ago, leading up to the carnage in Rwanda, Burundi and Uganda, as a part of the tribal conflicts were going on, one side was referred to as cockroaches, okay? And I have to tell you that we have been provided with information and intel about some of that discussion was taking place as early as the evening of the 22nd and the 23rd and 24th. In fact, a couple of FEMA representatives were uncomfortable and sent a classified communique to their Washington office indicating they were puzzled by some of the statements being made by city officials here in Minneapolis who are all white. And the reference of cockroach is something that came into play, Mr. Allen, and I'm thinking that it also, unfortunately, was something that came into play, oops, in this story, in last Sunday's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, in the story, as Mr. Anderson talked in terms of the wonderful opportunities afforded for him and his associates and business partners by the cockroaches.
Exactly. And that was an interesting point that the caller brought up, too, about the business opportunities. But on the flip side of that, you know, Mr. Edwards, a lot of these grants that are written on behalf of these nonprofits by agencies in North Minneapolis for North Minneapolis and agencies outside of North Minneapolis for North Minneapolis, based on the population, I think they're going to be pretty much out to win. Because 12,000 people, again, are gone.
That's right.
Well, how do you ride the back of those 12,000 black residents who are poor, unemployed, not insufficient education, qualifications to really do anything? And you go out there and you write a grant for anywhere from $5,000 to $100,000 or for yearly funding for up to $300,000. That's a you're going to address the poverty. You're going to address unemployment. You're going to address new business startup like Northway Community Trust should be the first one out of business, okay? Because they're supposed to be a brick-and-mortar nonprofit that assists in building capacity for businesses on Broadway Avenue, basically. They haven't done
right.
They haven't done anything at all. They haven't even been at the table for the storm meetings, the tornado.
That's right. Nowhere to be seen.
And
nowhere
so
to be seen.
If it functioned, if North Minneapolis nonprofit social service agencies function correctly, those types would be at the table. The Gary Cunninghams, Northwest Area Foundation, Headwaters, Northway Community Trust, all these folks. Neon was there as represented by Kenya McKnight, but
only at the last meeting. This is the meeting yesterday was first meeting she's been at, and there have been at least 9 meetings.
Yeah, and so with that said, I'm looking at this like, okay, these people have lost their mind.
Mm-hmm.
There's not going to be the same opportunity because the demographics has changed. So you're not going to be able to submit that grant that was due the May 31st.
By the way, the city's demographer has already given unofficial notification to the state and the feds that there will be a significant shift, quote-unquote, racially and economically, and whatever that's supposed to mean, you know what I'm saying? But some of the organizations you've named, because one of the most conspicuous by their absence is the powerful Ackerberg Group and their subsidiaries, there have been no representatives at all, have they? I haven't seen anybody. I haven't heard any pronouncements from them.
No, they're too busy doing their thing. I haven't heard anything at all from them.
Yet they are already being identified in federal documents as significant players in the rehabbing and rehabilitation. Now, here's the thing that's troubling. For at least 5 consecutive meetings, we met on the second floor of the cookie factory or whatever, and you could look out of the lovely, we were in a lovely conference room, beautiful, big conference room, I mean, state-of-the-art, big, beautiful windows, and I made sure to position myself for a couple of days to look also directly across the street at the Crystal Palace that's going up.
Yes.
And I had a couple of operatives even closer on scene. And it was amazing when we would raise the question about the real legitimate opportunity of a black workforce to really be gainfully employed. I would look over at the Crystal Palace, and it's nothing but white folks working.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah. And I was just fascinated because what Ms. Crowley just said also, with this tornado, the plans, and we said this last week's program and no one has challenged it, the plans for the saving of North High School, founded in 1888, just went out the window.
Yes. And Mr. Edwards, we have K.G. Wilson calling last 9 minutes of the show here. I'm going to try to give him the call into the show because we need to get an update from what happened with him.
Yeah, because they were kind of submarine because there had been no previous plan. He had made his announcement, as I remember, a long time ago because of the deaths. And it was interesting, the timing of doing this massive so-called volunteer at the same time that he was having memorial services as pertains to deal with the violence in the city.
Yeah, and
do we have him?
Yeah. I'm gonna give KG Wilson a call back, Mr. Edwards, and he says he has something hot, but we'll wait, and now we'll get that on a little bit later here. Probably
what do we have? He needs to get in because we're down to basically eight minutes.
8 minutes. Yeah, he's actually driving.
He needs you to call, brother.
Yeah, he's gonna call. We have another caller. It looks like that.
Let's get a caller.
Caller, you're live on the air. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you for taking my call, Mustafa from Minneapolis. Two quick things I want to share with you. One is United States Attorney General came to Minneapolis, as you may know already.
Right.
And
Eric Holder.
And Eric Holder had something that they call it a special meeting with the Somalis. That meeting was never publicized. They invited a few people who they call themselves, you know. So I forced my way in there, you know, because day before that I called the office and say, I'll come and I'll tell everybody about it. You know, I don't know why they were hiding. You know, they said, oh, only your community leaders know about it. But there were maybe, you know, maximum people who were there. 15% of them were Somalis. Everybody else was, you know.
Okay.
The majority. Anyway, not that much happened, you know, and the local leaders, you know, like Todd Jones, I think that's his name, the United States Attorney for Minnesota.
No, Todd.
And
Jones.
Rayback, they made sure that the Attorney General takes just a few questions in writing, but he was more interested to, you know, have a conversation with the people. That's what he said. But that never happened, you know, because they were, you know, running the show and they were telling him this, you know, this and that, you know, they. And anyway, the second thing is that, well, I know we're running out of time, you know. So the second thing is about Martha Halton Dimmick, who is a candidate to be appointed as a judge. I think that is something that we need to speak about, you know, and it's something really scary, especially to me, because I remember how she handled a case that was, you know, against someone, you know, but I was the victim in that case. She dismissed it, you know, and I would like to hear what you think about her, you know, candidate too.
And she's a candidate for what, appointment to the federal bench?
Hennepin County Bench.
Okay, but now you said she was a presiding. Was she a judge or a presiding?
Well, she was a city prosecutor at that time, but now she's candidate. She's one of the six people who are the shortlist for the governor. He will appoint one of them. So she's one of them.
Why don't we do this? Because there's also I know some real pain in the Somali community with the shooting death of a young man. Why don't you try to make sure that you give us a call next Saturday at the top of the hour, because there are some things that we need to discuss openly with you with respect to this attempt to utilize in the wrong manner some of the young Somalis, making them think that they are part of committees when in fact the real purpose is a Homeland Security plan to use them as informants on their own community. So why don't you make a commitment to give us a call at the top of the hour a week from today. We'd like to explore this a little bit more with you.
I will do that.
All right.
And thanks a lot.
Yeah, all right.
Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah, because we need that discussion, Mr.
Yeah.
Allen. I was figuring we would call. I was hoping he would call, give us a little bit more time, because no one is talking about what was a very interesting meeting, and he's the first person of significant standing in the Somali community who confirms that it was a controlled meeting.
Yes.
Very, very controlled. And the paper left the impression that 70-80% of the crowd and the participants were of the Somali community. He says 15%.
Yeah, exactly.
right, which raises the question. Was KG able to get back to us? We're about, what, 4 minutes away?
He's not going to be able to get back with us, because we'll have to talk to him on next week or write follow-up in a story in the blog here. See what he's had something hot, but he's driving, so he wasn't going to be able to give me a call.
All right.
On his cell phone, though.
Let's repeat, Mr. Allen, for transparency, that there will be a press conference at 2 o'clock. P.M. Central Standard Time at the Cookie Factory in North Minneapolis, press conference to talk in terms of the 36-month plan for the revitalization of a devastated North Minneapolis, which runs somewhat contrary to some of the stories in Sunday's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and then an investigative report by reporter Randy First that talked in terms of all these folks that were coming in committing fraud and just taking folks' money for quote-unquote cleanups, repairs, and et cetera, which apparently the city, though they have armed machine gun-carrying police all over the community, no one was able to serve as a deterrent to stop people from being violated and their money taken from them illegally.
Yeah, nothing. They got away with that lock, stock, and barrel. And they're still giving tickets. There's a guy volunteering, helping someone cut up some trees, and they gave him an $800 ticket, Mr. Edwards.
Wow.
Yeah. So
the paramilitary forces armed with automatic and full automatic weapons. $800 ticket just today?
Yeah. No, this happened 3 days ago.
Oh, yeah. Today you're being arrested because of the state of emergency. And the suspension of a writ of habeas corpus. So, hey, welcome to the Twin Cities, my friend. Welcome to the Twin Cities. All right, Mr. Allen, it looks like we're going to wrap it.
Yeah, we have 1 minute here. Don't forget to tune in to Black Focus 2 tomorrow at 3 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. Mr. Edwards, your topic tomorrow is?
We're going to be talking a little bit about the Minnesota Lynx. In fact, we'll be broadcasting live from the Lynx game. And then the television program, Ups, we'll be talking about the continued gentrification in North Minneapolis.
Okay, and at 5 o'clock in Minneapolis, tune in to Mr. Edwards' show, Black Focus, on Channel 17 in Minneapolis, on Minneapolis Television Network proper. And Mr. Edwards, your topic tomorrow is?
Well, that's what topic will be. I tried to cut that in. We'll be talking about the quote-unquote gentrification of North Minneapolis.
Okay, I'd like to invite listeners back next week at 4 p.m., same station, same channel, on point. And for daily news and information, check out the Independent Business News Network. That's IBNNnews.com. Mr. Edwards' column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder Weekly. It should be proved to be very interesting. Now we're going to leave you with something for our brother, Mr. James Brown.